is I Choose Life News and Views, sponsored by Indiana Right to Life and Allen County Right to Life, committed to defending innocent human life for all people of all ages. Your hosts are Kathy Humbarger, Amanda Banks, and Scott Kump.
Welcome to I Choose Life News and Views. I'm Kathy Humbarger.
I'm Amanda Banks.
And I'm Scott Kump. Choose Life News and Views is a joint project of Allen County Right to Life, Indiana Right to Life, and Bot Radio Network in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
And now the pro-life news.
This is your AFA Indiana News Minute. A medical study from China released last week has revealed an additional way in which women are victimized by the one-child policy, a significantly increased risk of breast cancer. Researchers in China have found that the dramatic rise in breast cancer in China is associated with the prevalence of induced abortions under the one-child policy. The study, conducted by a team of doctors from Tianjin Medical University Cancer Hospital, analyzed data from over 36 different studies in both the United States and China. Their conclusion? The risk of breast cancer increases as the number of induced abortions increases. One induced abortion increases a woman's risk of breast cancer by 44%, two by 76%, and three by 89%. There's more online at afain.net, the American Family Association of Indiana, a voice for Hoosier families.
You know, it's been a while since I've had the opportunity to speak to someone in Washington about the latest pro-life policy that's happening out in our nation's capital. Today, I'm very pleased to have with us by phone Mallory Quigley. Mallory is Communications Director for the Susan B. Anthony List in Washington. Mallory, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Amanda. It's a pleasure to be on.
Well, first, let's talk about a key piece of federal legislation that is still awaiting action in the U.S. Senate. This is the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. That's quite a mouthful, I know, but it is such an important piece of pro-life legislation. It's already passed the House of Representatives back in June, but unfortunately, no vote in the Senate yet. This act, I'll call it the Pain-Capable Act for short, would simply ban abortions after 20 weeks gestation, when unborn children can certainly feel pain. Even to those that aren't staunchly pro-life, this proposal seems very reasonable. After all, it's not banning all abortions, but just those after 5 months of gestation. So Mallory, first, if this legislation became law, how can you put it into perspective for us? I mean, how many lives would be saved from something like this?
Well, the Charlotte Lozier Institute has done, that's our education and research arm, has done research to show that more than 18,000 lives per year would be saved by this legislation. Like you said, it's very common sense. It stops abortions after 20 weeks, which is more than halfway through pregnancy. So it's really just a common sense piece of legislation that will have an immediate impact to save lives.
Absolutely. Well, 18,000 lives a year is nothing to cough at. That's remarkable. And as you said, it just seems like a reasonable proposal for even those that may not consider themselves 100% pro-life, for instance. Has this legislation ever received a vote in the Senate in years prior?
This is the first time that it's come up in the Senate.
Okay.
But to sort of put it in perspective, Amanda, the reason why this is so historic is that this will be the first time that the Senate votes on a bill that would actually save a class of unborn children from the abortion procedure. It's not something like a waiting period or informed consent legislation that, you know, these are wonderful pieces of legislation that give women the information that they need prior to this decision. But it's stronger than that. And it's not something like the partial birth abortion ban, which stops a particular type of procedure. This, the pain-capable bill, would actually save lives. So it's very groundbreaking. And it hasn't received a vote yet in the Senate, but Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina has pledged to ask for a vote on this in the new year. And we think that there's a very strong possibility that we will get a vote on this in the spring.
Wonderful. That is very good news indeed. And since we started talking about specific senators, I definitely want to talk about ours from here in Indiana. I know that Republican Senator Dan Coats is a co-sponsor of the bill, and we applaud him for that. Of course, a co-sponsorship is where a senator would assign his or her name to the bill, really showing their strong support of the legislation even before a vote comes up. So that's wonderful for Senator Dan Coats. Unfortunately, our other senator, who is a Democrat, Joe Donnelly, is not yet a co-sponsor. However, Senator Donnelly does say that he is pro-life. And I just wondered, Mallory, is this a partisan issue? Is this what happened in the House? Was it a Republican versus Democrat issue? Or is Senator Donnelly kind of out on his own here?
In the House, the bill passed. It was bipartisan, and we certainly would like to see the same thing happen in the Senate. Of course, Senator Donnelly has, prior to voting for Obamacare, he had a very strong pro-life record. It's since been mixed, but he did vote for the D.C. version of this bill while he was in the House of Representatives. So that's to say that there was a prior vote on the D.C. Painkeep Lumborn Child Protection Act, which would only impact the District of Columbia, and then Congressman Donnelly voted for it. So we would certainly like to see him sign on as a co-sponsor to the Senate bill. There's definitely still time for that to happen, and I would just really encourage all of the listeners, as constituents, you really do have an obligation as pro-life constituents to call your congressmen and senators and encourage them to co-sponsor legislation that you feel so strongly about. And this is certainly not a hard lift. The majority of Americans are opposed to late-term abortion past the point at which the unborn child feel pain. And this has been confirmed by 5 recent major national polls, all showing that either majority or plurality of Americans support this. So I would hope that the listeners would call Senator Donnelly's office and let him know that, and that they'd like to see him sign on. That would be really great.
Easily from our website, ichooselife.org, listeners can call Senator Donnelly from there. We'll post the phone number at ichooselife.org. You can also, of course, send an email, but I think calling is preferable, and getting through to his office, both here in Indiana and out in D.C. If you can do both, would be great, but out in D.C. would be the first priority. You know, I've also learned, Mallory, just today that Indiana Right to Life, along with our state affiliates across the state, including Allen County Right to Life, will be organizing a petition drive for Senator Donnelly's support and co-sponsorship of the Pain Capable Act in the near future. So I want our listeners to stay tuned for that information. I'm not ready to announce all the details quite yet, but very soon we will, and would love to have you involved with that petition drive to get Senator Donnelly to sign on as a co-sponsor of this important legislation. As Mallory said, it's really historic in the U.S. Senate for them to take a vote such as this that would save lives, save really a class of unborn children. So please stay tuned for that. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Mallory Quigley. She's communications director at the Susan B. Anthony List out in Washington, D.C. I'm Amanda Banks, and we're speaking about pro-life federal policy issues that are taking place on the Hill right now. The second issue I wanted to touch on today is a bit of a complicated issue, but I think we could simplify it for our listeners and just get to the heart of the matter. Recently, on November 21st, Senate Democrats employed what has long been termed the nuclear option. Now, that sounds pretty scary, and in some regards, it may be. What they did was they voted to change the threshold needed to confirm some of the president's judicial and executive branch nominees from 60 votes out of the 100 senators down to a simple majority of 51. And that is significant for many reasons. Mallory, I'm sure, can tell us a bit about that. But Mallory, first, can you just tell us kind of what took place there in the Senate that day? What exactly did they vote on?
Well, that's right. Senator Reid used what's called the nuclear option. He's been threatening to do this for a number of months now. And this was the method by which he changed the Senate rules to require a 51-vote threshold versus a 60-vote threshold for cloture on judicial nominations. This doesn't impact Supreme Court nominations or legislation, just specifically having to do with judicial nominations and the executive branch. So basically now what it means for pro-lifers, what it means for us, is that really Senator Reid has flung open the doors to radically pro-abortion nominees who will back the president's abortion expansion. It all depends on who's in charge. So the rules have been permanently changed now until they can be changed back. So say a pro-life majority takes over after 2014, this will still be in place unless the rule has been changed. But basically what it means for us right now is that it will be easier for them to confirm pro-abortion nominees. For example, a woman named Cornelia Pillard, who she was a Georgetown professor nominated. She was an executive branch nominee from President Obama. She's a longtime pro-abortion radical who said that abortion was a necessity to free women from what she calls the, quote, conscription of maternity. So these are really people that are far outside the mainstream, and it's very troubling that this longstanding democratic process has been really just thrown on its head.
Mallory, can you tell us, was it basically a partisan vote of Democrats voting as Senator Reid wanted and the Republicans voting against this change?
Yes, this was basically a partisan vote. And now there's nothing to stop Senator Reid from changing this to affect Supreme Court nominations and even legislation. So that's the real danger here, is that it undermines the democratic process. It undermines the power of the minority to protect what's at stake here. The Republicans have been using the filibuster to delay these pro-abortion and otherwise unsuitable nominees. But now that the rules have been changed, there's really nothing to stop Senator Reid from expanding this power grab all the way up to Supreme Court nominations.
I used to work with the Hill quite often in my role at Focus on the Family. And in that time, it was about 10 years ago now, I think ever since that time, probably about the last decade, the filibuster has been used routinely to stop the judicial nominees in particular that the minority party was not in favor of. And, you know, it's different than normal legislation, which you mentioned in the beginning. This would not affect legislation still with bills like we spoke about before, the Pain Capable Act, for instance. A simple majority of 51 would be needed to pass that in the Senate. But there's always been this higher threshold in recent years for judicial nominees, a supermajority of 60 votes. And so, you know, the nuclear option was talked about even nearly 10 years ago, but this is the first time it was actually voted on and it passed. So this is a big deal for many reasons. With the Supreme Court, Mallory, the question of the next Supreme Court nomination, can you sort of tell our listeners why that now could be in question and kind of how it could affect the makeup of the Supreme Court in the end?
Well, I guess the thinking there is that if the Republicans take back the Senate majority after the 2014 elections, they would be able to theoretically use this advantage. It creates an advantage for the majority party, obviously, to place new justices on the court that will be sympathetic to the right to life cause. But really, it just depends on who's in power. It depends on what happens in the 2014 election. So theoretically, down the line, this could work out in the favor of some pro-lifers, but there's really no telling. The problem with it right now is that it just really undermines the democratic process, and this is why people didn't do it from the beginning. This is why the Republicans opted not to do it several years ago, and why I believe when then Senator Biden was in the U.S. Senate, he cautioned against his party doing this. So it's certainly very interesting. I will tell you, from talking to my friends that work on the Hill, on the House side, they don't even try to understand the Senate rules. It's very complicated on the Senate.
Right. Absolutely. And, complicated for good reason, I think, in most respects, but difficult for the average person to understand. I do hope, though, that our listeners can understand from our conversation that what took place on November 21st is very important indeed. And it's one of those issues we'll want to stay tuned for, as the president is always nominating new federal court nominees and, to a lesser degree, executive branch nominees. Of course, whenever a Supreme Court nominee would come up again, you know, that's something we all hear about. But these federal court nominations and the executive branch, we don't always, you know, unless we're very tuned into what's going on Capitol Hill. So I appreciate your perspective, Mallory, and just helping us to sort through this. It'll be interesting to see in the weeks and months to come just how this affects the nominees that are confirmed in the U.S. Senate and take their spots on the federal bench. It really could make a big difference, especially for pro-lifers. So thanks for that perspective today and for all of the work that you and your colleagues do at the Susan B. Anthony List.
Well, thank you so much, Amanda. I appreciate it.
This is Kathy Humbarger in the studio with you today. Thank you so much for tuning our way. On this particular program, we're going to focus on the main thing. And the main thing is that in the year 2012, 8,808 little boys and girls were dismembered and discarded with surgical waste here in the state of Indiana. That is almost an incomprehensible number, 8,808. Of those, 5,418 were murdered at the hands of several abortionists in Marion County. However, most of them at the Planned Parenthood facility. It's a brand new state-of-the-art facility located at the intersection of 86th and Georgetown Road. Any of you who live in Indianapolis are probably familiar with that area, but we have a very unique story to tell, and I'm going to introduce you to an unsung hero, Ruth Gurdian. Thank you so much for being with us today, Ruth.
Well, thank you for having me.
The story that involves Ruth is really a very interesting one, and one that I think speaks to the hearts of every one of us who may be appalled at the number of babies that are aborted, yet we don't know what to do. Ruth took a very unique approach, and she's going to be sharing with us her story about what the Lord led her to do. Ruth, tell us a little bit about where you live and why the life issue is so important to you.
Well, I live in Avon, just outside of Indianapolis, and I belong to the St. Susanna Parish Church on Washington Street. And the pro-life movement has always been very important to me, ever since, in fact, the abortion Roe versus Wade was inaugurated January of 1973. I just returned to the United States in December of 1972 alone with my five children to resume living here in the States when this horrible bill was passed the following month in January of 73. And I tried to get involved from the very beginning in the early months of 1973, and in those days, I must say, when there were meetings called to discuss the Planned Parenthood and the abortion, the new abortion law, the rooms were filled. Mm-hmm. There were so many people who came out in great numbers to discuss and to strategize on how to counter this and try to eliminate the law from the books. Well, as you know, 40 years have passed now, almost 40 years. And, well, 40 years.
Right.
And it's just amazing that despite all of the strategies and prayers even, there hasn't been too much success.
I was just going to ask you if at the time you were meeting in those early weeks and months after the Roe versus Wade decision, if you had any idea, and those in the room had any idea, that now, almost 41 years later, we would still be addressing this issue. Did you think you were going to be able to come together and put together a plan, and our country was going to be able to put this behind us, and we were going to be able to move on?
Absolutely. There was high hope that that would happen in a short time, too. We thought it would be off the books because of its horrendous nature. But here we are, still struggling, but with new strategies and new ideas. And that's where my plan the plan came to me.
As I understand, Avon is not that far from Georgetown Road. About how many miles do you think you are from the Planned Parenthood facility?
It takes about a half an hour to get there, even through the neighborhood. Yeah, Lyndhurst, 10th Street, on up to Lafayette Road, and then Georgetown. No, it's not a bad drive, but about half an hour.
Now, how did you become aware that there was a new state-of-the-art Planned Parenthood facility right there at that intersection of 86 in Georgetown?
Well, I got involved with the 40 Days for Life in February of 2013, this very year, and I found my way up there and began to pray with everyone else there on certain days. And it was during this period, the beginning of the 40 days on the 10th of February, Ash Wednesday was the 13th. And so it was really a very powerful spiritual time, I think a very spiritual time for this idea to occur to me in the Adoration Chapel at St. Thomas More. I was doing both. I was going to the Adoration Chapel and taking part in the prayers up there. And all I prayed for, and that's all I ever pray for, in the Adoration Chapel is for the end of abortion because it's been 40 years.
Yes.
And I can't say enough about how powerful that number is biblically for us to be have waited so long or just been unable to turn this monstrous law over. So one day, shortly after Ash Wednesday, I was praying desperately in chapel, asking God to send us help, do something, help us, send us leaders. And after the praying in that way, I was getting up, and I was just about to turn around when I heard in my head, "Why don't you do something?" And I was absolutely shocked. How could I, who am I, to do anything? And that idea, of course, was with me continuously after that. And within about 2 days, I was in my car driving and listening to EWTN, and I heard a program, I think it was Barbara McWiggin's program, and it was about pro-life across America, or the billboard people. And Mary Ann Kuharsky was explaining about how her program, in existence for about 25 years or so, has been putting up billboards all over the country. And it clicked. It was an idea that I had seen some billboards along I-65 when I was driving up to my work. And I just instantly connected my thought of what I could do and what she has done. And I thought, why can't I arrange to have a billboard? But at the same time, praying in front of Planned Parenthood, having had that idea instilled into my brain, I began to look at the billboards around Planned Parenthood. There are only two. But the one, the special one that I had my eye on was the one just to the side of Planned Parenthood.
Right there, right there on 86th in Georgetown.
Absolutely, right there. And I thought, my gosh, this billboard is right in Planned Parenthood's backyard. How could there be a better spot to have a pro-life billboard than there? Not just anywhere. Of course, they work anywhere, but there.
But that's a very, very effective location, obviously, for women, desperate women who are coming to Planned Parenthood to end the lives of their babies. What better place to put a billboard encouraging them to reconsider? So how did you proceed from there? You picked out this billboard. Was there anything on it at the time?
Yes, there was an ugly brown sign on it, advertising a rock station.
Okay.
And when I saw that, I thought, well, when are they going to take that down? So I called Clear Channel and found that it would be down sometime in March. And I thought, well, that's time to see about putting a new one up. But I called Mary Ann Kuharsky in Minneapolis and talked to her staff about how they went about putting billboards up and what the cost would be and if there were any possibilities of lawsuits and any complications. And they assured me that no, they've never been sued, but they also said that they would negotiate a price for me. And the best they could do was a tremendous amount. Would you care to know?
Yes, if you'd care to share it, because we have a big God, and I'm sure that there's going to be God's hand in this story.
Indeed. Well, all they could do was get a price of $2,000 a month.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
But then again, you know, God doesn't tell you or ask you to do something for him without taking you by the hand and taking you step by step.
Exactly.
And as I said, the idea came a few days later, the program, the billboard program, the billboard people. And then on March 3rd, we were going to have a presentation of the Gabriel Project in the church. And after that presentation on a Sunday, I approached Eileen Hartman.
I know Eileen.
Someone told me she knows a million people who
right.
can help.
That's about right. At least a million.
So I talked to her, and she was delighted with the idea. And but I said, you know, no way could we or I even afford $2,000 a month for a billboard. And she assured me she knew people inside that could help.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, she pulled strings and talked to people. And I was on the phone, too, with Clear Channel. And we finally got them whittled down for a year's contract, though. I had to sign a contract for a year, and they brought it down to $807 a month.
Wow, that
is
a significant drop.
That's all the time we have for this week. Tune in next week to hear the conclusion to the conversation between Kathy Humbarger and Ruth Gurdian.
If you or someone you know is in a crisis pregnancy, help is just a phone call away. Call 877-791-5475. If you or someone you know is dealing with grief and pain after an abortion decision, whether you had an abortion, convinced someone else to have an abortion, or even participated in a procedure, call 877-791-5475. You'll be referred to a pregnancy resource center in your area, a place where free and confidential services are available. That's 877-791-5475. 877-791-5475.
You've been listening to I Choose Life News and Views. If you have questions about this program or if you'd like to support the fight for life, please call 260-471-1849 or go to ichooselife.org, because without the right to life, no other rights matter.